entrepreneurs across 86 different...
From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Yemen ceasefire ends, the fighting resumes. The Saudi-led coalition resumed airstrikes against Shiite rebels in Yemen after the end of a five-day humanitarian ceasefire on Sunday. The coalition airstrikes hit rebel positions in the southern port city of Aden. Earlier Sunday, Yemeni political leaders met in the Saudi capital Riyadh to discuss a negotiated settlement to the ongoing conflict. No representative of the Houthi rebel group attended. Edward Uranian reports.
The conference opened in Riyadh with a traditional Yemeni folk dance as 400 top political leaders met to discuss the political crisis and military conflict raging in Yemen. The Houthi rebel group stayed away and demanded talks be held in a neutral country. Internationally recognized Yemeni President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi said the Yemeni people await stability, which can only come if the country's legitimate government and its institutions are restored and the Houthi rebels are disarmed. Edward Uranian, Cairo.
The Islamic State group claims to have seized the Iraqi provincial capital of Ramadi, giving the militants their largest victory this year. In Washington, U.S. defense officials have refused to confirm the IS statement, saying only that Ramadi remains fluid and contested. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza made his first public appearance since a coup attempt last week. During a news conference at the presidential palace in the capital Bujumbura, he described talks held last week in Tanzania with presidents of nearby African countries on threats from Somalia's al-Shabaab militants, who have warned of attacks against Burundi and other nations. He did not mention the failed coup plot or violent protests over his third-term bid. The Nigerian military says it destroyed at least 10 Boko Haram camps in the Sambisa forest in the country's northeast. A defense spokesman says a number of insurgents were killed in the operation. One soldier was killed in a landmine explosion. Egypt hanged six men convicted of killing soldiers in 2014. The men were reported to be members of a Sinai-based militant group with ties to the Islamic State. Israeli demonstrators and police clashed with rock-throwing Palestinians Sunday in occupied East Jerusalem as thousands of Jewish nationalists marched through the city to mark the 48th anniversary of its capture during the Six-Day War. Several police were reported injured, and at least six Palestinians were arrested. Macedonians rallied in the capital Skopje on Sunday with more than 20,000 protesters calling for the resignation of Prime Minister Nikola Gruevski. Pressure on the leader has been building since a wiretapping scandal broke out earlier this year, prompting questions about how tightly the government has controlled the media, judges, and elections. This demonstrator spoke with reporters.
The security situation in Kumano is very bad. You know, we need something more. You know, we need freedom, we need food, we need work. For that, we come here.
Opposition leader Zoran Zaev vowed Sunday the demonstrations would continue until the prime minister steps down. Ukraine says three of its soldiers were killed and 17 wounded in new fighting with pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine. U.S. Assistant Secretary for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Nuland is in Moscow for meetings with Russian officials in a new bid to try to implement a faltering truce. In the southwest U.S. city of Waco, Texas, nine people were killed Sunday and at least 16 others wounded after a shootout erupted among rival biker gangs at a restaurant. It's not known if bystanders are among the dead. Amtrak's Northeast Corridor trains will be resuming normal service today, following last week's deadly derailment in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Eight people were killed and more than 200 injured. The National Transportation Safety Board is still trying to find out why the train was traveling twice the normal speed when it crashed. Four nuns, including two Palestinians, are the Roman Catholic Church's newest saints. Pope Francis canonized them Sunday at a Mass at the Vatican. Two of the nuns lived in what was 19th century Palestine. Their canonization is being seen as an encouragement to Christians across the Middle East who are currently facing a wave of persecution from Islamic extremists. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA. morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Peter Plotter in Washington. Today is Monday, May 18, sitting in for the vacationing James Batty. And here are some of the stories we are covering. A prominent member of Zambia opposition, Richard Kapita, defects to the ruling party.
Mr. Kapita, like any other member, has the right to associate with a group of politicians he feels comfortable with. And we are glad that from 1998 to yesterday, he associated with our party. And he has now decided to work with a different set of politicians. We can only wish him well.
Spokesman for the United Party for National Development, Kuchunga Simusamba, he says his party is recruiting new members and isn't worried. The United Nations Refugee Agency works to bring together South Sudanese families separated by conflict. Communications professionals from across Africa want the media to help improve the continent's image and reputation around the world.
In Kenya, where Al-Shabaab is a big issue, how does my government want to ensure that Kenya is portrayed not just like everywhere in Kenya is hit by Al-Shabaab? And the same happens in Nigeria. The same happens in Mediterranean and even South Africa.
A participant at the recent Africa Public Relations Association asks how African government and media can offer a balanced picture of development on the continent. Also, a group of Indian doctors offer free surgeries in Zimbabwe. A new project by the Rockefeller Foundation aimed to boost African health, food production and employment. Those stories, plus Marco Ume Sport and our Listener of the Day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front has a prominent new member, Richard Kapita. Until last weekend, he was the vice president of the United Party for National Development, or UPND. President Edgar Lungu announced Kapita's switch to the ruling party at a meeting of supporters in Mwinulunga in Northwestern Province on Saturday. This just after Mr. Kapita announced his defection from the UPND. Analysts say it's a major setback for the opposition party ahead of the 2016 presidential election. For reaction, I reached out to Kuchunga Simusamba, the spokesman for the UPND in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Mr. Kapita, like any other member, has the right to associate with a group of politicians he feels comfortable with. And we are glad that from 1998 to yesterday, he associated with our party. And he has now decided to, you know, work with a different set of politicians. We can only wish him well.
Isn't this a big blow to your party, since you said he's been with the party since the 90s? Wouldn't this, affect your party? Of course, he has supporters within your party. Would you expect some further defections?
Well, we do not expect some further defections. As you know, for over 3 months, he has been in Northwestern Province trying to mobilize supporters to defect with him. And yesterday's defection was a clear testimony that the people are not with him. This is a personal decision that he has made. The province where he hails from has firmly remained, still supporting the United Party for National Development, UPND. We are not shaken. We think that over the years, many other members have been trained in leadership skills, and they're ready to take over. You know, this is an opportunity for them to say that a vacuum has been left up there, and other members will fill it and save and probably be able to, you know, drive us further than Kapita was able to drive.
The optics of his defection doesn't look good, and obviously President Edgar Lungu introduced him to the public, so it looks good on the ruling Patriotic Front. People are saying the defection of Mr. Kapita is an indication of the failure of the leadership of UPND leader Hakainde Hichilema. What is your take on that?
Well, I don't think that the defection of Kapita has anything to do with the leadership style of Mr. Hakainde Hichilema. If that was the case, Mr. Kapita should have left a long time ago. Mr. Hichilema has been president since 2006, and so during this period, they served together with Vice President Kapita. So I do not think that that could be the reason. I take this as a personal decision by Mr. Kapita to probably, you know, experiment with a different kind of political leadership.
So what's next for the UPND ahead of next year's election? Because, you know, the president is going to stay for just a little while, completing the term of the deceased president, Michael Sata. Now you have a defection. What's next for the UPND?
What's next for the UPND is that we have embarked on a national grassroots campaign program, and we are recruiting more members. And, you know, we are focusing on the next big test, which is the 2016 election. And I think that's where our energies and our mindset is set. So the Kapita setback is a minor setback for us. We are focusing on the bigger picture, which is 2016 election.
Kuchunga Simusamba is the spokesman for the Zambian opposition, the United Party for National Development, UPND. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. The United Nations Children Fund says at least 800,000 children in South Sudan have been separated from at least one parent during 17 months of conflict. The fighting is between armed supporters of President Salva Kiir and his political rival, former President Riek Machar. As a result, more than 2 million people have been displaced from their homes. And humanitarian officials say many families have experienced only pain, anxiety and struggle. But amid the suffering, there have been some joyful reunions. Reporter Mugumi Rakarinji has more from Juba.
56-year-old Peter Chol was going about his work as a Presbyterian pastor in New Site Village near Bilfam Barracks when South Sudan's conflict first erupted on December 15, 2013. After the fighting broke out, three of his five children fled the family home in Juba.
So I remain here in Juba, running for my dear life in the UNMISS camp in Tongping here. So when the children ran away from me, they found one of the good person taking them to East Africa. They were there for some months.
Chol's two older sons, aged 24 and 20, accompanied him to Tongping. But the three younger children, aged 15, 13 and 6, were taken by a neighbor to Kakuma camp in Kenya, where they were provided with food, health services and education by humanitarian agencies. The youngest of Chol's children, 6-year-old Dwyer Peter, vividly recalls the anguish he experienced while living as a young refugee without his parents. Speaking in Nuer, Dwyer says the woman who was taking care of them would always excuse herself to fetch water and go to the market. He says she would leave the children alone without food or water. So then the children would go from house to house asking for something to eat and drink. He says the locals would call them beggars. UNICEF says at least 600 children are believed to be psychologically distressed due to the violence and displacement. The Child Charity says that along with the more than 800 displaced children in the country, an additional 8,000 have been identified and registered as unaccompanied or separated. UNICEF says such children are vulnerable to even further abuse. Paul Odent, ICRC Coordinator for Restoring Family Links Program, helps connect families in places like South Sudan.
Well, I think it's very traumatizing, and it has a big effect to them. It's a big effect on their education as well, on their physical development.
Chol still has no information on the whereabouts of his wife or even if she is still alive. She was in United States when the conflict began. Despite his anxiety over his wife, Chol is grateful that the ICRC arranged for the reunion with his young children. For now, Chol hopes the conflict will end soon, that his children will be able to resume their education, and that will one day be reunited with his wife. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devs Ruakarinj in Juba.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Today is Monday, May 18. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Ahead on our program, Mark Omer Sport and our listener of the day. Communication professionals from across Africa are resolving to project a positive image of the continent. Experts gathered by the 40-year-old Africa Public Relations Association, or APRA, say the Western world mostly focuses on negative issues in Africa, while there are so many positive things happening on the continent. Moki Edward Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Bernard Solo, lecturer at the University of Calabar in Nigeria, says Africa's image has been painted by Western media outlets in particular as that of a continent riddled with strange diseases, poor, heavily indebted, conflict-prone and ablaze in war.
We've been having unfortunate stories on Africans drowning in the Mediterranean. But what we don't say, the success stories of Africans flying back from Europe with the PhDs and MBAs and bachelor's degrees to come back to Africa and start companies and contribute positively to the development of GDPs of our respective economies. Let's pick on the few positive aspects on Africa and build on that. Then people will start having a different perspective of what's happening in Africa.
Charles Nkronzo from Daystar University in Kenya says the dark image of Africa is a result of many of its leaders' failures to assure governance and accountability and to practice democracy. He says many African leaders care more about maintaining power than attending to pressing needs of the people they are supposed to serve.
When you look at what is happening in Africa, we have Boko Haram. In East Africa, we have Al-Shabaab, Mediterranean issues around there. And in South, we have the xenophobic issues. These are issues that leaders must not sit back and assume that somehow they'll fade away tomorrow. For example, in Kenya, where Al-Shabaab is a big issue, how does my government want to ensure that Kenya is portrayed not just like everywhere in Kenya is hit by Al-Shabaab? And the same happens in Nigeria. The same happens in Mediterranean and even South Africa.
Bogwa Jirogi, an APRA official in Kenya, says the experts are unanimous in believing that the reality of much of Africa is quite different from the perceptions outsiders have and have resolved to work with the African Union to tell more positive stories about the continent.
What we want to do is to come up together telling our own story. Go to West Africa, there are so many projects that are being initiated. Our tourism industry is booming. We have the most ambitious infrastructure in Kenya today.
The International Monetary Fund predicts Africa will have the largest economic growth in the world over the next decade, and domestic industries and foreign investors are already taking advantage of this growth by investing in the continent. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
19 doctors from India have been performing free surgeries in Zimbabwe's third largest city of Mutare, thanks to Rotary International. Since arriving on May 3rd, the surgeons have treated more than 1,000 patients, various areas including orthopedic, optometry and gynecology. Reporter Loida Moyo has more.
The program known as the Rotary Medicare Project Vocational Training Team to Zimbabwe is the brainchild of the Rotary International and the Rotary Foundation. It started 2 weeks ago at Mutare Provincial Hospital, Nyanga District Hospital, and Sakova District Hospital's eye unit. Surgeries were conducted in various fields, including orthopedics, gynecology, optometry, and others. Manikalani Provincial Medical Director Dr. Patron Vengema Faune says the specialist doctors successfully carried out 1,100 individual surgeries after setting a target of 800. She says the specialist doctors were working in 5 medical categories in the 3 referral hospitals where patients were screened before undergoing the necessary operations.
For Nyanga District, they actually organized a weekend where they went out with doctors, I think that had been supported by the Honorable Minister Superman Dwanzira, and they went and they screened in their facilities. And then for the province, for the other districts in Manicaland, we worked with our Provincial Minister of State and also the Provincial Administrator, who then used our local leaders like the councillors and the chiefs to mobilize for our communities to go to the nearest district hospital for screening.
Dr. Mafaone says the free medical service was a timely intervention as most people were not in a position to pay for such surgeries due to financial hardships. One of the beneficiaries, Love Mods Namarira, was involved in a motorcycle accident. His injured leg was supposed to be amputated, but this was addressed by the visiting doctors.
I am very grateful for the assistance. My leg is now fine.
Dr. Rajan Sharma, who operated on Namarira's leg, says he is lucky to have had the operation in time and with the right care, since he was going to be an amputee or become handicapped.
He has sustained the fracture for 2 weeks back, and it was not operated. And it was only given a conservative treatment only in the form of traction, which he should have a deformity and physical disability of 2-inch shortening. His lower limb should have been 2-inch short. Now we operated him. Now he is absolutely okay now.
Gynecologist Dr. Manisha Jekteb says the team carried out surgeries on a large number of women with fibroids.
Fibroid patient. She was nulliparous, having no children, and having three big fibroids. So we have removed only the fibroids. The uterus is saved, and the operation is now just done. Now there is an emergency cesarean section, and after that, again, more 4 patients we are supposed to operate.
Project advisor and pathologist Dr. Rajiv Pradhan notes that the 19-member team was in Zimbabwe as a gesture of extending a helping hand to less privileged people in Africa. Reporting in Mutare, this is Leda Moyo.
New efforts by the Rockefeller Foundation are working to strengthen African economies as they face growing numbers of young people and challenges to their economies from the effects of climate change. The group's president, Judith Rodin, said the foundation is working to strengthen agriculture, water and health systems, as well as boosting the technology sector. From the Kenyan capital, reporter Ruben Chiama reports.
The Rockefeller Foundation president said $100 million was being channeled through an initiative called Digital Jobs Africa in 6 countries: Ghana, Kenya, South Africa, Nigeria, Morocco, and Egypt.
We know that the youth bulge predicted for Africa means that we have to focus, the continent has to focus on employing this extraordinary youth bulge that we're going to see. And so developing growth and developing growth in the ICT sector, which often yields some of the better paying jobs.
Africa's health and prosperity does not only depend on high technology. Rodin says the continent is also experiencing unprecedented shocks and stresses as a result of climate change, from drought to flooding. Millions of lives are at risk. She said the Rockefeller Foundation is working to help small farmers deal with the effects of climate change. It's collaborating with partners to improve water management so runoff from flooding can be used to irrigate fields. In partnership with the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, the foundation is helping to develop drought-resistant seeds. Also, together with the World Food Program, they have developed a technology called Risk Matrix to help predict an impending drought.
We then created, and the African Union is now running this, a country-level insurance mechanisms where the country can buy insurance against the next vulnerability, climate-related vulnerability. And what that does is allow them to get access to resources immediately rather than waiting for development aid once the crisis has occurred, as well as preparing for it more effectively because they have an earlier warning system in the process. And that insurance-like mechanism is one piece of the solution.
The Rockefeller Foundation is also helping African governments deal with another issue occasioned by climate change: the spread of disease.
We know because of climate change that more infectious disease has been skipping from animals to humans, many varieties over the last 30 years, when we didn't believe that was possible before. So as we see these changes, we've got to prepare both health workers, but also health systems to develop the capacity for early warning, early monitoring, and more effective responding.
Rodin says these and other projects include critical market-based solutions that should help Africa continue to develop. She encouraged governments to refine their policies to help guarantee their success. Reporting for VOA News, this is Ruben Chama in Nairobi.
It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sport. Here's Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Peter. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the Athletics South Africa Invitational meeting in Ekurhuleni, Gauteng province in South Africa on Saturday. African long jump champion Zach Visser of South Africa leaped to a distance of 8.18 meters, thus qualifying for the World Athletics Championships due in Beijing, China in August. He's all fired up for the season. Visser explains why he has only just started competing this year.
Yeah, I think last week was just my initial comeback. It was my first meeting after my operation I had in January. I planned and prepared for this meeting like a week later, and now I've qualified. I think I just came here to qualify for the World Championships, and that's what I did today.
Tell us a little about this injury. What exactly happened?
I got injured last year, April, slight injury. We just had to manage it through the season. I had to go for a scan. After the scan, they realized there was actually something wrong with me, and then we fixed it in Jan. There was sketch about the comeback. It was going to take 6 months, and now I'm back in four. So everything went amazingly, thanks God for everything he's done for me, so I'm happy.
So going forward, you've qualified for the World Championships. What are your plans, or do you want to take it easy this year because of the injury?
No, there's no taking it easy. Work is work. I think I'm ready for work now. I've been on leave for a long time, so now I'm ready to take these boys on. I mean, on the field, basically, I'm 100% now. No taking it easy, going for world medal. First need to get to that final. Everything I'm doing now is in preparation for that championship.
Your personal best?
8.32, but we need to break that this year.
That was South Africa's Zach Visser, the Africa long jump champion, speaking in Ekurhuleni. Meanwhile, South Africa's 2011 Africa Junior Championship 110-meter hurdles silver medalist Tsepo Lefete improved his personal best to 13.57 seconds. He has mixed feelings about his achievement.
I'm pretty happy with the PB. I'll take it any day, but I wasn't really happy with my execution of the race. I kind of stumbled midway, but I was surprised with the way I caught up with Antonio, and I was able to run him down. But the PB, I'll take it any day, and I'm happy with the PB.
Two PBs back to back in a week. What does that say going forward?
I need more racing. I need more tough competition. I'm progressing. I'm only getting better. So yeah, let's get more races and see if I can qualify for World Champs.
That was South Africa's Tsepo Lefete, the former Africa Junior Championship 110-meter hurdles silver medalist, speaking in Ekurhuleni. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Ekurhuleni, Gauteng province in South Africa.
Thank you, Mark. Have a wonderful day. And here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, May 18.
I want to use this medium to call on the attention of the incumbent government and the incoming government, based on the transition that will take place between the ruling party of PDP and the incoming government of APC. Please, the incoming government should take a note on exactly what has transpired between the decision of the incumbent government. They should be able to adopt a policy that will lift Nigerians to a greater height, that the expectation of Nigerians will be benefited. I'm Isman Suleiman Jamata, calling from Wakanda, Abuja, FC Nigeria. Thank you, UAE.
Thank you, listener, for your comment. Please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. That's it for this Monday, May 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporter Ricky Shryok, as well as sports editor Marco Ouma, I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, wishing all of you a good Monday morning.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing health clubs and fitness. This light-hearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.